It's good to have you with us, especially for these dear friends from my new friends from Michigan, and then also Josh's mother, Miss Cindy, I believe. And it's good to have you with us. So I tell you what, why don't we do it like this? Brother Don, where are you? Right here. Why don't you go first, if you don't mind? Brother Josh, if you'll go next. And then who is the third one? Brother Jesse, if you'll go next. And I don't know if Alan's not ready, okay? So that ought to be just about right. And so for those who are not normally with us, what we've done is we've gone through the book of Proverbs, and we're on chapter 24 tonight. And we alternate between evenings. I'll teach from Proverbs, let's say next week, I'll teach from Proverbs 24. But they will teach from it, from what God's shown them. And then I'll not be here, but hopefully I won't teach the same thing they are. But I'll teach next Wednesday night. And that way we're spending 2 weeks on each chapter of Proverbs. And until we finish with 31, which of course is just seven chapters away. And then we'll take up a new study, and I'll be doing the teaching on that. But I wish I was going to be here to hear what's going on tonight, but I better get with the young people. So Brother Don, if you'll come, please, at this time. Lord bless you, my friends.
Okay. The verses that I picked were verses 3 and 4 of Proverbs 24, which is, through wisdom is a house builded, and by understanding it is established, and by knowledge shall the chambers be filled with all precious and pleasant riches. I've spoken several times previously about personal connections that I have to several of the verses in Proverbs, but these two particular verses here that I'm talking about tonight, Glenda and I share a personal connection with these two verses because we have them hanging prominently on our living room wall, right above the television. So when you first come in the front door of our house, it's the first thing that you see. It's a beautiful piece of artwork that we had custom made as a first anniversary gift to ourselves. And I chose these particular verses because they seemed appropriate as a dedication for our new home, which we'd bought about 6 months prior to that, and also for our new marriage and life together. Again, it was our first anniversary. And by the way, we're coming up on our third anniversary, which will be on the 20th of February. And Glenda's at home now and not feeling well tonight. She's mostly better from the flu virus, but she tends to kind of relapse a little bit and start coughing, and so she's home tonight resting up for work tomorrow. But at the time that we got this piece of artwork and hung it up on the wall, we had completed a lot of repairs and renovations on our house, most of which we were able to do ourselves. And because God, through his wisdom, had blessed me with a few skills, and also with Glenda, who was right there alongside helping, making sure that I didn't hurt myself, handing me tools and materials as I needed them, and doing various jobs like pulling up thousands of staples and nails where the old carpeting and hardwood flooring had been, and just a million little things that also needed to be done to make our house a home. She was being that virtuous woman that God's wisdom in Proverbs 31 says is worth far above rubies. Again, through wisdom, a house is builded, a home is builded. Anything that you can think of is builded through wisdom. A business, a family, a church. But in this case, a house, it can be interpreted literally, but it's also a good metaphor for lots of other things. And we had decorated the house using both old items from our previous lives and marriages and some new items to make our home a place where we could live and in my case, work. Also a place where our children have all been able to come visit and stay with us from time to time, as well as a place where we've been able to invite people over and use these pleasant or precious and pleasant riches that fill our rooms to share our personal stories and testimonies, our knowledge, things that we've learned in our lives, experiences that we've had. But I think it's the middle portion of these two verses, and by understanding it is established, that is most salient to our home and our marriage. As many of you know, Glenda and I both came from prior marriages that had each lasted about 25 years, and that we had each expected to last until death. That was the vow that we had each taken with our former spouses, and we were each completely committed to making that happen. But it didn't happen for either of us. And I believe that the root causes in both cases were failures of understanding, which led to those marriages being weakened over time, as opposed to being established or strengthened. I mean, that word established has the idea of strengthening it, reinforcing so that it will endure. Okay. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, verses 22 and 23, Paul says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body." I think it's fair to say that in the modern age, many women will look at that word submit and interpret it to mean be a slave. But to submit means to consent to being under someone else's authority. Unlike slavery, which is anything but consensual, and if the woman has married a good man, then he should be worthy of having that authority, and submitting to him should not be a problem. Okay? And if I'm fair about it, I mean, I think a lot of men would look at that verse and say, okay, I'm the boss. Well, the woman's supposed to submit herself to me. I'm the boss, no matter what. And that's not what it says. Because it says the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. And remember what Christ did as the head of the church. He sacrificed himself, gave everything for us. And that's what a good husband does for his wife and his family, is he gives all that he has to provide for them, to support them, to raise them, to do the things that a husband and a father are supposed to do. In verses 25 through 28, Paul further says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." So that's what I just said. You know, it's an agape love that Christ had for the church, and that's the type of love that we men as husbands are supposed to have for our wives. And he goes on to say that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. And clearly a husband should love his wife as part of himself, so much so that like Christ, he would even sacrifice himself to save her. And again, a husband who loves his wife in this way is worthy of having authority over her. And again, her submitting to him should not be a problem. Without going into too much detail, in my opinion, our former spouses didn't fully take to heart and understand these particular verses of Ephesians. And because of this, our two marriages, our two homes, my own identity as a husband, family man, and Glenda's identity as a wife and Christian woman, we're all weakened over time and eventually destroyed, and we both just had to pick up the pieces and move on. So it's incredible the damage that gets done when people fail to understand biblical principles. And they aren't able to operate their marriages, operate their homes, their families, and their businesses, and their churches in the way that God would have them to do. And so despite this, I'm thankful that God gives second chances, and that he brought me and Glenda together to allow us to have a marriage and a home that is based on God's wisdom and a daily, lifelong effort to establish and strengthen it through understanding. So that was it.
Thank you, Brother Don. Good evening, everybody. All right. So in Proverbs 24, I chose verse 6. I was kind of nervous when he started to pick his verses. I was like, But hey, if we share the same verse, then we're going to get even more knowledge of the same verse. A little variety in the spice of life there. So I called mine. Wait, I need to tell you my verse first. Verse 6. So for by wise counsel thou shalt make thy war, and in multitude of counselors there is safety. So I titled mine War Ready. So war is battle and argument, or all out war. When I first read that, I really was a little puzzled as to what he meant as war right here, Solomon, that is. And so it brought me straight to Luke 14, verse 31. Where Jesus says, "Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first, and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? I mean, if a man that has 10,000 people or soldiers, and he's wanting to wage war against someone that has 20,000. He definitely ought to sit down and consult every resource that he has to see if he could even wage that war. Or not even so much wage the war as a fight, but to come to some form of peace or an agreement or some kind of treaty or something along those lines to where it can be avoided at all. Which, in my opinion, could be a war in his mind, too, because he doesn't know exactly what to do. And so we must think, pray, and seek counsel before we react. If we are being bullied or persecuted, then we need to restrain our flesh from coming out and attacking. Defend ourselves if necessary, but we still need to think before we react. I have noticed that I sometimes need to think even before I think. I can get carried away with what I want to say and realize I need to take a step back. There's a guy that I work with who uses choice comments to me when I mess up or he's just trying to have fun, and I just don't have fun like that anymore. Or at least the old me may have, but I'm working on transforming, as Paul has taught me, to be renewed. And so some of the things that he says just bother me to the core, but it would only be a don't take me so seriously or an I'm just kidding to him, so I must try and stay calm because I can feel my flesh want to erupt, honestly. And I've thought I wanted to hit him a few times. You know, it was my reaction. But I must stay calm as I can and not say what my initial thoughts are. And so Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. I believe one day I'll say, you know, what all you say to me sometimes bothers me quite a bit, but I have a feeling that anything else would stir up a hornet's nest. And so words can be used as weapons, like Proverbs 15:28. We don't have to go very far for this one. The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. And so let me pause there for just a second, too, because I wrote this last night. I finished typing it last night. And today at work, as I was sitting there meditating, the Lord brought on to me, sometimes you don't need to do anything at all, but just endure. And so he doesn't picture me as a punching bag, I'm sure of it, but I was. And so the Lord just said, sometimes you just got to endure, and that's just all there is to it. And it brought me to what Jesus says. I didn't write this down or look it up before I got here, but when Jesus was on the cross, I don't know which of the four books he said it in, but Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And whenever I heard that, it really dialed me back a whole lot to where I hope that he does end up knowing, and he has a good come to Jesus moment, if you will. And so anyways, Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. Study your answers and seek counsel. Talk to God and other godly people. David Cloud, my favorite, thanks to you, Brother Jesse, said, I looked up counsel in that encyclopedia, and it brought me to David saying, we don't need human opinions when we seek counsel. We need biblically informed wisdom. Therefore, counsel with people that are spiritually mature and have studied the word diligently. This also brings me to Proverbs in the same chapter 15:22. Let's see here. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Purposes get established by consulting counselors, which builds confidence, biblically sound confidence. That's why I love Paul, too, because Paul gives me great insight on how to be really confident with my spiritual warfare, which is a different subject I may bring up at some point in time. I'm working on how much I can actually bring up without giving credit to what I go through on spiritual warfare. So bear with me on that one, because I do want to give my testimony on it. But again, I don't want to talk about demons or devils too much. Back to where I was at here. Sorry about that. That got me a little sidetracked. 15:22, right? Okay. Biblically sound confidence. Confidence you can feel the devil hate. Yeah, that's why I got sidetracked. And the Holy Spirit give you a pat on the back for it. Therefore, there is safety in the multitude of counselors. It builds good relationships. And my favorite part of having this relationship is the common love for the Lord. There's just something safe about that I feel in my soul. So with that being said, wise counsel shall make thy war. Now you're readier for whatever task lay ahead, whether it be a negotiation or to tell a guy at work that you feel bullied by him or by what he says, or you're concerned about going to war with 10,000 less soldiers than your enemy. What used to be something I would give little thought about is now part of my meditation, and I do all that I can to ensure that it pleases the Lord. I'm learning more ways to deny myself and take instruction plus counsel from God's word. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 9. That's one of my memorization verses, and it was actually the last one in my Jim Berg book, which I absolutely love. And Arlen, may rest in peace, and we rejoice in you, brother, mentor. And he gave me that book, and I absolutely love it. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 9, it says, for we are laborers together with God. I absolutely love that part, that God's working right here next to us. Ye are God's husbandry, ye are God's buildings. We're his husbandry, I can't say chore. I think chore is an inappropriate word, but it's kind of similar. It's like when I make my bed in the morning is, I guess, considered a husbandry. I'm not quite sure if that's what it would be considered, but possibly, because it's not going to be a chore. It just becomes instinct. And we are God's building. I mean, he created us, and he gets to dwell in his own building too. It's really phenomenal how that is as well. And so we labor with him in many ways, but in this case, to help us put on the whole armor of God, which Ephesians chapter 6, 10 through 20, which I'm not going to read all that. Y'all are familiar with the armor of God. But so when we labor with him to fashion our armor, we get a different experience with the Lord. And I'm tickled to be able to have that. And so we may be safe in the multitude of our brethren because we're all working on our armor. And it's good to have each other's back. It really is. I definitely appreciate it, y'all. I mean, it's impeccable having all this. Y'all are my family, and I love it. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Appreciate you too, Joshua. It's a great lesson. Thanks for sharing that with us. All right, Proverbs 24. Surprise, surprise. I, too, got nervous when both of you were speaking, but I'm going to trust that's the Lord's will for us tonight, that all of these pieces piece together. Brother Don talked about a house being built and established, the home, the inside, and Joshua talked a little bit about some of that as well with his. I was looking at verse 27. Proverbs 24, 27 says, "Prepare thy work without," it's another way of saying outside, "and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterwards build thine house." So I titled what I pieced together here very quickly for sake of time, just I called it efficient and effective. Efficient means the most gain with the least waste, and you might think of relating that to quantity. So think of maybe a glass. How tall or what's the diameter of the glass? How much is in the glass? And effective is whatever success is found in producing a desired or intended result. And you might think of that as quality. So how does that relate to this verse here? Well, a house or a home, and forgive the analogy, but a house or a home is not a rotisserie chicken that you stick in and it just does its thing. You set it and forget it. Okay? It must be the home, not the chicken. Must be continually supported. There's continuous effort that goes into it if it will continue to exist. Another way of saying that might be resilience. You know, the fire doesn't go out, so to speak. And as Brother Don stated, the same with this metaphor is true for practically everything in life or anything in life. It might be something tangible. It might be something intangible. We must plan, prepare, and persevere. And personally, I deal with this on a daily basis in the intelligence cycle. And I'm not going to teach you how to become an intelligence officer unless you'd like to. I'll give you some pointers. But basically, to take raw information and convert it into intelligence so it's actionable and good decision-making can be made as a result of the intelligence that's provided, there's a cycle for that. And that cycle needs to be followed consistently. But many people fail in that discipline because they jump straight to step number two, which is collection. That's when you're getting things. You're pulling in data. You're analyzing it. You're putting it together. If you didn't first do step number one, which is planning, there needs to be a purpose. Solomon did this for the building of the temple. 1 Kings 5:18 says, "And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders did hew them," talking about cutting these things down, the timber, "and the stone squarers, so they prepared timber and stones to build the house." So here's a lesson in working with method. In all things that we set out to do, and I talk about this a great deal because much of my life is consumed with process, getting things done. One of the most important things that we need to do when we set out to accomplish something successfully is to prepare. We need to consider what we're setting out to do. The opposite of that is willy-nilly. Just jumping in and hoping something will work out, right? Well, in the literal building of a house, there's great wisdom to be found in this. And again, I really appreciate that it dovetailed with what Brother Don said of the conversion from a house to a home. What this is saying in this verse is take care of everything outside of the home before you build it, so that when you establish the home, things are in place to support it. Literally, in this verse, I believe it's talking about get the fields ready. You have limited time to get that done, whether it be season or availability of time, whatever it is, get the fields ready. In Solomon's time, get the supplies ready. It's one thing to call, you know, I think sometimes of, say, an Amish barn building, where they really get the crowd out and they get a barn up in a day. That would be a foolish opportunity to get that crowd together and then forget we don't have lumber. We're wasting everybody's time. There was travel time to get out there, travel time to wait around, and then travel time back, and no barn got built. We see that. That's obvious foolishness to us. But there are dangers that pop up in our lives spiritually if we did not, through God's wisdom, get things established and built through proper planning. Because when we fail to meet our objective, or we had a mission, and we only got halfway to it and realized we don't have the supplies we need, I didn't prepare my mind for this, I don't know what to do in this situation, I now open myself up to a temptation, and I may want a shortcut. I may want to go my own way. I think Joshua referenced that. Our flesh is ready to provide its input in at every cross street. But if we do that, we will result in failure and disgrace, waste time, waste money. So in any undertaking, maybe we desire a position. Do you desire to get promoted at work? Do you desire to have a position? A husband-wife relationship was mentioned. Maybe you would desire a position in a marriage relationship or in some other capacity. What would my recommendation be to you as a result of this wisdom that was expressed in this verse? Find out what the requirements are for the position. Develop your own self for that position, and the time will come. The same principle applies in many other areas, and I'll not go through my examples. So there's preparation, but there's also patience. It's noble to have a good idea. And naturally, I would throw myself in the crowd that thinks every idea I have is a good one. I know the truth, and every idea I have is not a good one. But I also open myself up to a temptation, even if I think of something spiritual. I'm going to do something nice for somebody. And I'm foolish about it. I didn't seek the Lord's wisdom. I didn't ask His blessing on it. I didn't even pray, acknowledge Him for direction. I may lose my patience. I may try to reap the harvest without doing the effort of planting the crop. And sometimes that leads to recklessness and foolishness. And all of our lives are on display. Others can see that. So what I'm trying to say here this evening, if we could grasp these truths of prepare thy work, a lot of preparation, prepare thy work without, and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterwards build thine house, I'm saying, what effort do we give to preparing what we're setting out to do? Relationships. What is it that you might want in life, in a relationship? Do you want a friend? Are you preparing yourself to be a friend? And the kind of friend that should attract another friend. Same would be true for a spouse. Time. Psalm 90, verse 12 says, this is a prayer, so teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Do you run out of time? Do I run out of time? I'm out of time. But if I'm always running out of time in life, frustrated that I didn't get done what I set out to do, maybe the problem isn't with time, because time is relatively consistent, just 1 second at a time, but I might not be managing my time wisely. I might be setting the wrong priorities. Again, this goes back to seeking the Lord's will. Church. Do I have expectations for the church to be built? And I'm talking, you know, maybe more people or more programs or this or that, but I'm talking about me. If I want me to be established, as I should, that's a proper desire, Do I prepare myself for church before I come in attendance? If we expect to build and maintain anything, we must first make preparations for its necessities, what it will require, before we can enjoy any of its conveniences or benefits. That should be a relatively obvious statement, but we might know it doctrinally or mentally. Theoretically, you might say it's a good idea, but in practice, the things we actually set out to do, sometimes there's a large discrepancy. So you apply that however the Lord may direct that to your hearts, and he may not have an application for you this evening, but I would venture to say whatever you set out to do with an idea, with an ambition, that always requires preparation, and there will be specific ingredients that that outcome, that target, that success must have. Are we working on those necessary ingredients? Many times it's undesirable, but how efficient it was when Solomon built the temple, and there's so much to learn there because David had a passion. He so badly wanted to build it, but the Lord forbade him from doing it. David did not remain idle. He did what he could, and so he prepared himself. Solomon prepared well this massive undertaking, so when it was time to build, the pieces were cut, the pieces were fit, and it went together. But I don't know. That might be a little bit too abstract for you. I'm just saying that we might want to build something, and it's a good thing. But if we rush to it and don't think through what are we doing here and how are we doing it, can we sustain this? And so that might apply financially. There are so many different applications of that. I hope something in there is helpful to you. Main thing is just follow the Lord's leading through his words. Okay, let's change gears here. Thank you again, men. I know it takes time to study and compose and takes nerves to deliver. So thank you for your boldness and your testimonies. It's very much appreciated.